You may find some of this episode to be triggering, distressing, disturbing, or challenging. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Friday, November the 27th, 2020.
Immaculate Heart High School, graduating class of 2020. For the past couple weeks, I've been planning on saying a few words to you for your graduation. And as we've all seen over the last week, what is happening in our country and in our state and in our hometown of LA has been absolutely devastating. And I wasn't sure what I could say to you. I wanted to say the right thing, and I was really nervous that I wouldn't, or that it would get picked apart. And I realized the only wrong thing to say is to say nothing. Because George Floyd's life mattered, and Breonna Taylor's life mattered, and Philando Castile's life mattered, and Tamir Rice's life mattered. And so did so many other people whose names we know and whose names we do not know. Stephon Clark, his life mattered. And I was thinking about this moment when I was a sophomore in high school. I was 15, and as you know, sophomore year is the year that we do volunteer work, which is a prerequisite for graduating. And I remember my teacher at the time, one of my teachers, Miss Palia, said to me before I was leaving for a day of volunteering, always remember to put others' needs above your own fears. And that has stuck with me through my entire life, and I have thought about it more in the last week than ever before. So the first thing I want to say to you is that I'm sorry. I am so sorry that you have to grow up in a world where this is still present.
That was the voice of Meghan Markle, Meghan, Duchess of Sussex. The newest member of the royal family. Well, almost the newest. Archie is the newest, made that speech in June 2020 via her cell phone video recorded for the commencement of the Immaculate Heart High School, a school of all female students. Just 1 month later, Meghan Markle would suffer what is called a miscarriage. She lost her second child. On this episode of The Politocrat, looking at miscarriage and looking at Meghan Markle and Chrissy Teigen and countless other women, not as prominent or famous, who have suffered the same deep wound. That coming up next. Don't forget that you can now listen to the Politocrat podcast on Audible at audible.com, and wherever you get your podcasts, please subscribe now. And thank you for your support.
I was 11 or 12 years old when I was just about to start Immaculate Heart Middle School in the fall. And it was the LA riots, which was also triggered by a senseless act of racism. And I remember the curfew, and I remember rushing back home, and on that drive home, seeing ash fall from the sky and smelling the smoke and seeing the smoke billow out of buildings and seeing people run out of buildings carrying bags and looting. And I remember seeing men in the back of a van just holding guns and rifles. And I remember pulling up to the house and seeing the tree that had always been there completely charred. And those memories don't go away. And I can't imagine that at 17 or 18 years old, which is how old you are now, that you would have to have a different version of that same type of experience. That's something that you should have an understanding of, but an understanding of as a history lesson, not as your reality. So I am sorry that in a way we have not gotten the world to the place that you deserve it to be. The other thing, though, that I do remember about that time was how people came together. And we are seeing that right now. We are seeing that from the sheriff in Michigan or the police chief in Virginia. We are seeing people stand in solidarity. We are seeing communities come together and to uplift. And you are going to be part of this movement. I know that this is not the graduation that you envisioned. And this is not the celebration that you imagined. But I also know that there's a way for us to reframe this for you and to not see this as the end of something, but instead to see this as the beginning of you harnessing all of the work, all the values, all the skills that you have embodied over the last 4 years, and now you channel that. Now all of that work gets activated. Now you get to be part of rebuilding. And I know sometimes people say, how many times do we need to rebuild? Well, you know what? We are going to rebuild and rebuild and rebuild until it is rebuilt. Because when the foundation is broken, so are we. You are going to lead with love. You are going to lead with compassion. You are going to use your voice. You're going to use your voice in a stronger way than you've ever been able to, because most of you are 18 or you're going to turn 18, so you're going to vote. You are going to have empathy for those who don't see the world through the same lens that you do, because with as diverse and vibrant and open-minded as I know the teachings at Immaculate Heart are, I know you know that Black Lives Matter. So I am already excited for what you are going to do in the world. You are equipped. You are ready. We need you, and you are prepared. I am so proud to call each of you a fellow alumni, and I'm so eager to see what you're going to do. Please know that I am cheering you on all along the way. I am exceptionally proud of you, and I am wishing you a huge congratulations on today, the start of all the impact you're going to make in the world as the leaders that we all so deeply crave. Congratulations, ladies, and thank you in advance.
Welcome back. More of Meghan Markle's speech, as you just heard, in a video recording that was played at the commencement of Immaculate Heart, a school for female students. Meghan Markle herself went to Immaculate Heart High in Los Angeles, California. And that speech I found to be profoundly moving. Of course, that speech was made a little more than, about 2 weeks after the execution of George Floyd. The speech that you just heard was made on June the 4th. Of this year. Within 5 weeks or so of that speech, Meghan Markle would lose her second child. Now, this is going to be an episode that's going to be difficult for me to get through, let alone for you perhaps to listen to. Miscarriage is something that is very, very common in our society. Very common indeed. From what I have learned, between 10 and 20% of women will suffer a miscarriage. That's a pretty high number. It's a high percentage. When I saw that speech that you just heard, I was moved by it. On its own, because of its passion and forthrightness about Black lives and about women moving into the world, female students who are going to be moving into the world as young women and then moving into the world as full-fledged adults and making a difference in the world. Those are the components that moved me, but then the other thing that moved me was knowing. Having seen this speech for the first time just yesterday, knowing that Meghan Markle would have gone on to lose her second child. The other day, Meghan Markle released an op-ed in the New York Times entitled "The Losses We Share." And it was this writing, dated November the 25th, that moved me as well. All at once, I felt the heartache that I couldn't understand, of course, as a man, what that would be like to lose a child in that way. Something that had grown within you for a number of weeks, and then in the 20th week, ceased to grow any longer. This is going to be a difficult episode for some of you. So, dear listener, I must warn you now that you may find the rest of this episode to be very challenging listening, very difficult listening. But for those of you who decide to stick through this, I think you might find a sense of inspiration from the words that I'm going to be reading from Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex. These aren't words that are happy and shiny. Many of these words are very graphic. Some of these words are very melancholy, but they are designed as a template for those of you in the world who have gone through and experienced what Meghan Markle did this past July. What makes it difficult for me, as I am about to read these words to you, and then get into this subject matter, is that this is a woman who has been vilified and torn down by many of my fellow Englanders. You know, the white ones. The white ones who call up BBC Radio and LBC Radio in the United Kingdom and say all of these nasty, racist things about Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex, about Meghan Markle, a member of the royal family. All of these things, these attacks, and none of them admit that they are racist, and that the attacks that they levy and lobby at her are racist and misogynoirist. I think it is important to read this story from Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex, in the New York Times, dated November the 25th, 2020. And I'm going to read the full account here. I'm warning you once again that this may be difficult for you to listen to. The Losses We Share by Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex. November 25th, 2020, The New York Times. It was a July morning that began as ordinarily as any other day. Make breakfast, feed the dogs, take vitamins, find that missing sock, pick up the rogue crayon that rolled under the table, throw my hair in a ponytail before getting my son from his crib. After changing his diaper, I felt a sharp cramp. I dropped to the floor with him in my arms, humming a lullaby to keep us both calm. The cheerful tune, a stark contrast to my sense that something was not right. I knew, as I clutched my firstborn child, that I was losing my second. Hours later, I lay in a hospital bed holding my husband's hand. I felt the clamminess of his palm and kissed his knuckles, wet from both our tears. Staring at the cold white walls, my eyes glazed over. I tried to imagine how we'd heal. I recalled a moment last year when Harry and I were finishing up a long tour in South Africa. I was exhausted. I was breastfeeding our infant son, and I was trying to keep a brave face in the very public eye. "Are you okay?" a journalist asked me. I asked him honestly, not knowing that what I said would resonate with so many, new moms and older ones, and anyone who had, in their own way, been silently suffering. My off-the-cuff reply seemed to give people permission to speak their truth. But it wasn't responding honestly that helped me most. It was the question itself. "Thank you for asking," I said. "Not many people have asked if I'm okay." Sitting in a hospital bed, watching my husband's heart break as he tried to hold the shattered pieces of mine, I realized that the only way to begin to heal is to first ask, "Are you okay? Are we?" This year has brought so many of us to our breaking points. Loss and pain have plagued every one of us in 2020, in moments both fraught and debilitating. We've heard all the stories. A woman starts her day as normal as any other, but then receives a call that she's lost her elderly mother to COVID-19. A man wakes feeling fine, maybe a little sluggish, but nothing out of the ordinary. He tests positive for the coronavirus, and within weeks, he, like many hundreds of thousands of others, has died. A young woman named Breonna Taylor goes to sleep, just as she's done every night before. But she doesn't live to see the morning, because a police raid turns horribly wrong. George Floyd leaves a convenience store, not realizing he will take his last breath under the weight of someone's knee, and in his final moments calls out for his mom. Peaceful protests become violent. Health rapidly shifts to sickness. In places where there was once community, there is now division. On top of all of this, it seems we no longer agree on what is true. We aren't just fighting over our opinions of facts. We are polarized over whether the fact is, in fact, a fact. We are at odds over whether science is real. We are at odds over whether an election has been won or lost. We are at odds over the value of compromise. That polarization, coupled with the social isolation required to fight this pandemic, has left us feeling more alone than ever. When I was in my late teens, I sat in the back of a taxi, zipping through the busyness and bustle of Manhattan. I looked out the window and saw a woman on her phone in a flood of tears. She was standing on the sidewalk, living out a private moment, very publicly. At the time, the city was new to me, and I asked the driver if we should stop to see if the woman needed help. He explained that New Yorkers live out their personal lives in public spaces. We love in the city. We cry in the street. Our emotions and stories there for anyone to see, I remember him telling me. Don't worry. Somebody on that corner will ask her if she's okay. Now, all these years later, in isolation and lockdown, grieving the loss of a child, the loss of my country's shared belief in what's true, I think of that woman in New York. What if no one stopped? What if no one saw her suffering? What if no one helped? I wish I could go back and ask my cab driver to pull over. This, I realize, is the danger of siloed living, where moments sad, scary, or sacrosanct are all lived out alone. There is no one stopping to ask, "Are you okay?" Losing a child means carrying an almost unbearable grief, experienced by many but talked about by few. In the pain of our loss, my husband and I discovered that in a room of 100 women, 10 to 20 of them will have suffered from miscarriage. Yet, despite the staggering commonality of this pain, the conversation remains taboo, riddled with unwarranted shame, and perpetuating a cycle of solitary mourning. Some have bravely shared their stories. They have opened the door, knowing that when one person speaks truth, it gives license for all of us to do the same. We have learned that when people ask how any of us are doing, and when they really listen to the answer, with an open heart and mind, the load of grief often becomes lighter for all of us. In being invited to share our pain, together we take the first steps toward healing. So this Thanksgiving, as we plan for a holiday unlike any before, many of us separated from our loved ones, alone, sick, scared, divided, and perhaps struggling to find something, anything, to be grateful for. Let us commit to asking others, "Are you okay?" As much as we may disagree, as physically distanced as we may be, the truth is that we are more connected than ever because of all we have individually and collectively endured this year. We are adjusting to a new normal where faces are concealed by masks, but it's forcing us to look into one another's eyes, sometimes filled with warmth, other times with tears. For the first time in a long time, as human beings, we are really seeing one another. Are we okay? We will be. Warning, you may find some of this episode to be triggering, distressing, disturbing, or challenging. Listener discretion is advised.
I had 4 losses in the span of 1 year.
My sister-in-law had 4. I didn't know. It was just, you don't talk about it, and I think that is not helpful to the women who are going through it.
I will never be over the loss of that baby.
Welcome back. The women you heard from had all experienced miscarriage or knew people who did. And those women you heard from a New York Times article from October of 2019, which I will link to, as well as the opinion piece from Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Sussex, that I read just before the break. It's enormously powerful and uplifting. I was uplifted by, as a man, I mean, I was uplifted by the words of Meghan Markle. This is a tremendously courageous human being. In the public spotlight, with everybody tearing at her like a bunch of jackals and vultures and wolves, she continued to stand anyway and project her truth and let her light shine in the most deeply traumatic thing that I think a woman could possibly go through: the loss of a child. Hundreds and thousands of women go through this loss every year in America, but beyond as well. And it is something. Hundreds of thousands of women experience this loss every year in America and beyond. Hundreds of thousands of women every year in America experience this loss, and women all over the world do. It is something that must surely be extremely difficult to process and rebound from. In fact, I don't know that you probably do rebound it if you are a woman who has gone through this. You just go through what you've gone through and you hope that there is a support network for you, that the people around you have an ear to listen, an arm to comfort and hug you, and they're there for you whenever you need them to be. I have a tremendous amount of feeling and empathy for any woman who goes through what Meghan Markle went through, what Chrissy Teigen went through, and what countless hundreds of thousands of women every year go through. Losing a child in this way, in any way, is pain beyond words. Wounds that perhaps never heal for some. And yet this society that we live in doesn't want women to talk about this. And what that does is put a stain in the heart of that woman and any woman. It is a deterrent. It is as if a man is telling that woman to be quiet. How dare you speak about this? I mean, that is the response that Chrissy Teigen got. That is the response that Meghan Markle got. On my Twitter page, when I shared the article from 2 days ago, somebody actually tweeted me, presumably a man. The bot or the avatar did not lend itself one way or another. I think it was a man. Something to the effect of, well, So much for Megan wanting things to be kept private. I blocked the person immediately. Quite frankly, I should have reported them. The fact that the person had less than 200 followers, not that the number counts, it's the stupidity and the heartlessness that does, more than the number of followers. But I should have reported that human being, that piece of filth, who said that. And of course it was a bot, wasn't even a human being in my view. Meghan Markle has been attacked like this for a number of years now. Ever since she became a member of the royal family, over 2 years ago now, she has been absolutely excoriated, not only by a cross-section of white England, but also by the British press and by some people in public circles who are public figures. It is disgusting. It is cowardly. It is misogynistic, misogynoirist, and racist. And the amount of people I heard on LBC Radio, on BBC Radio, saying racially veiled or racist things, quite frankly, it wasn't even veiled, about Meghan Markle. It was absolutely disgusting. Chief among them, a lot of white women, particularly older women. And there were white men doing the same thing, disgusting human beings doing this to Meghan Markle. And on that occasion, it was because Meghan Markle, it wasn't even anything she did. Meghan Markle and Prince Harry made the decision, the Duchess and Duke of Sussex, to break from the royal family and cease doing royal duties and live in another country, namely this one, the United States of America, specifically in the same state that I broadcast to you from every day, podcast to you from every day, here in California. And the amount of venom that was lobbed at Meghan Markle earlier this year, just this year, was absolutely heinous. And these people should really look themselves in the mirror before engaging in these cowardly, callous attacks. And the right-wing media, Daily Mail and company, were at it as well. And the same thing when this news came out this week in the New York Times. There was virtually no coverage of it, at least not in a meaningful way. It was as if a drive-by. There was no conversation around the issue of miscarriage. And it's a misnomer to even call it a miscarriage because it's as if you're blaming the woman for what happens. It's not her fault. Any woman who goes through this, it is not your fault. But in this patriarchal society, and these men and some women who make these comments about, well, why does she have to share the photographs? Why does she have to talk about it? It's their fault. It's the society's fault. It's the patriarchy's fault. It is not your fault. This is the thing that really gets me about some of these men. On the one hand, when a woman decides to come out and say that some man in the workplace or some celebrity raped her or groped her or forced himself on her, violated her in some way, shape, or form, or harassed her in some way, when that woman comes out and speaks out and says that, from a lot of men and some women, the response often is, well, why didn't you come out and say it 20 years ago when it happened? Or why didn't you come out and say it 5 years ago? Or it's, I don't believe you. Or it's, you're lying. Or it's, well, why were you wearing that dress? Or it's, you just want to tear that man down. You're conspiring against him. But then when Meghan Markle or Chrissy Teigen or any other woman has the bravery and the courage to share such an intimate and painful experience and come out there and say what I just read to you a few minutes ago from Meghan Markle, these same men turn around and say, oh, why did you talk about it? Why did you say that? I thought you wanted privacy. I thought you didn't want to be talked about. Why are you sharing this? That's a little bit too much information for me. Do you see how hypocritical and disgusting these men are? None of those men or those women ever ask Meghan Markle, are you okay? None of them ever say, I'm so sorry to hear that this happened. I'm so sorry it happened to you. My deepest condolences to you. None of that. None of that gets said when it comes to Meghan Markle or Chrissy Teigen, both of whom are black women. And when there are some white women who suffer this, the same kind of thing, you know, the response again is, oh my goodness, why do you have to share that with us? Same thing happens when a woman writes about periods. Emma Barnett, who is a journalist in the UK, who I follow on Twitter and she follows me as well, does the morning show on BBC Radio 5. You should listen to it. Really appreciate what she does. And is someone who speaks out on issues, and I'm really a fan of hers because it's really good when people do speak out about issues that really matter, that are huge issues in society, that people would really rather pretend did not exist. But Emma Barnett recently wrote a book about periods. And I can guarantee you she got heat and backlash from a number of different people for writing a book that is meant to help women. More than 51% of the population. And it doesn't matter, again, numerically, how much of a percentage. It matters that somebody cares enough to help fellow human beings, to inspire, to give fortification and strength to put an arm around, to empathize with, to engage in displaying feelings of empathy and solidarity. That is how you grow. That is how you offer and provide comfort. What Meghan Markle did in her op-ed on November 25th of this year was provide comfort and healing, a sense of it at least, to women who may have suffered what Meghan Markle herself suffered earlier this year. And for me, that was moving. For me as a man, that was moving and inspiring. It's telling that in 2020, the subject of miscarriage, as it's called, is still taboo. More than 500 people shared their stories of losing a child in this way with the New York Times in this article from October of last year. Actually, we heard from some men here. It says we heard from straight women, from male partners, and from same-sex couples. From people in every corner of the United States and in at least a dozen other countries. From women who had miscarriages in the 1960s and 70s, and women who were miscarrying at the very moment that they were writing to us. Again, I just want to, at this point, offer a warning again that you may find some of what I am saying here and what I'm reading from to be highly distressing or triggering or disturbing. So I do want to advise you on that now because I'm about to read something that I think you may find triggering. I do think that it is important to talk about this, and hopefully at some point in the future, someone I can invite on the podcast will do so. I don't know if that's going to happen. But we really do need to be talking about things like this, as painful as they are, and they're deeply painful. I have no idea, but I can bet that it is deeply painful. I will never experience that kind of pain. And I really hope that no one else has to, but I also know that hundreds of thousands of women do experience the pain of losing a child in this way every year. So this story goes on in the New York Times from October of 2019 to say the following. These are the people that got in touch with the New York Times. From women who had one miscarriage and never got pregnant again, and from women who had five or a dozen miscarriages and went on to have children. Here's some quotes from this story. Quote, I wish I had prepared myself for how hard it would be to continue talking with my wife about her own pregnancy attempts immediately after I lost my pregnancy. Their names are here, but I don't want to give out their names, even though their names are published in this Time story, and you can read their names once you see the link to this in the liner notes of this episode. But I'm not going to put their names out there. I just don't feel that that's appropriate, even though they're published right in front of me in the New York Times. Quote, as the husband of a woman who miscarried, I wish there was more information for people like me to support my child's mother. Well, I tell you what, I don't disagree with that. And how would I disagree with that? I think the thing is just to be there for her. I think that's the easiest and most obvious thing to advise someone like the person who said what was quoted that I just read to you. The easiest way is to be there. Just be there. There isn't some magical, mystical, majestical thing that you have to do. Well, flowers and things of that nature don't hurt a bit. But being there for her is the most important thing. And listening to her is the most important thing. Again, I want to warn people again. What I'm about to read, I find distressing, but I think it's important to read it. But I also think it's important to read it not just because of its content and regardless of whether I find it distressing or not. This may empower somebody. This may, even this kind of information that I'm going to read, as graphic as it's going to be, and I want to warn you about that, someone may identify with this experience because they may have gone through this very same thing that I'm about to read to you. It may move them to come forward with their own story. in their own time, if they are ready to do so. There are people who are never going to reveal such heartbreaking things publicly. And that's perfectly okay as well. Everybody is not the same. This will be the last quote that I'm going to read from someone who personally experienced this. My first pregnancy ended in miscarriage in May 1970, before abortion was legal. I had been pregnant for 3 months. When it became evident that the pregnancy was no longer viable, I was told by my obstetrician that there was nothing else he could do, and that I would just have to go home and wait until I went into labor. When labor began, I went to the hospital as I was instructed to do, and I was given very little other information about what to expect. My husband was not allowed to be at my bedside, and I spent long, lonely hours through the night, bleeding heavily, until I was taken into surgery to have a D and C. The spinners, I'll be around. Whenever you call me, I'll be there. Whenever you need me, I'll be there. I'll be around. You have to be there. If you, heaven forbid, experience something like this, I do hope and pray that there is someone there for you. It must be an incredibly lonely feeling for a woman who experiences this. And sometimes perhaps the man who is normally the one who is with her may be very emotionally distant. Or maybe not. Maybe you have a man with you who cares and who really does care. It's just a very sad thing, and I can't imagine how much pain that a family goes through in situations like this. And then the things that I think a woman must go through when this happens to her, you know, the doubt, the instinct perhaps to blame themselves for what happened when it isn't their fault. But I bet that perhaps in some of the situations, no matter how much a woman is told that it's not, they internalize that they feel that they are at fault for something that they didn't do. So in those moments, it must be very difficult for someone. Dear listener, I mean, this is very troubling, and it's very sad that we're not supposed to talk about this somehow. And that reinforces so much damage for any woman who goes through this. It is essential that we talk about this. And I think we have to be a whole lot louder than we are. If we cannot, in this late stage, at this late stage of 2020, talk about miscarriage out loud and have a conversation about it, listen to the women who've experienced it, listen to them openly without any kinds of instinct to judge. If we can't even do those things, we are some heck of a warped society. We are in some kind of trouble. sometimes all that I think a woman might need in that situation is for somebody to be there for her. And I've said that before in this episode, that this is not something that gets talked about. And we have to talk about this. We have to express our feelings around this. Women do, but I think men do as well. And to those women who may be listening, who have gone through this, I am so sorry that you have experienced this. And if I could offer words of comfort to you in person, I would do so. These are things that sometimes get buried, that people try to not want to talk about, but how can you do that? For some, perhaps it's a coping mechanism that says that they've got to do this. But I don't think a woman ever forgets something like this. I do want to make it clear that I will be, again, linking to this particular article in the New York Times that I've been reading quotes from here. It is quite an article to read, and I will warn you that you might find some of it to be very challenging to read, but I do think it's necessary to read because this is how we begin to listen and understand. And at least get a sense of the pain. I mean, obviously, if you've not gone through something like this, and obviously men, we've never gone through this, you won't have that kind of depth of understanding, but at least you can empathize with the situation that comes from it. And, you know, I mean, at least you will have that to utilize, if nothing else, because it is not going through it. You know, this is a particularly powerful article in the Times that I will issue a warning on, too. It is a particularly powerful account, and I think it can't be anything less than that when you really look at the reality of it. And some of this is very graphic, but come on now. Just imagine yourself losing a child in this way. And imagine, no matter who you are, whether you're Meghan Markle or Chrissy Teigen, or whether you are one of hundreds of thousands of generally anonymous women who don't have the platforms that those two aforementioned women do. Just imagine the loneliness of that moment. I cannot imagine how isolating, how challenging. And then the depression that comes from that, and Chrissy Teigen's talked a bit about it. It's very challenging. But I think that we've got to talk about these things, no matter how uncomfortable some people may find it to be. Obviously, with great respect for the women who go through this, and of course, with the mindset of offering a listening ear, a compassionate heart, and a sound mind, a non-judgmental mind. It's heartbreaking. And I do feel that we need to talk about this. And I know I've said that several times already, but we do. And as I said earlier, miscarriages happen between 10 and 20% of all pregnancies. And again, that's a high number. It's a high number. And that's something that is deeply alarming. Deeply alarming. So, you know, this is where we are. And I really would like to talk to an obstetrician at some point about these things, because I don't think I do it justice by trying to talk about it myself. And I mean, I could, and of course, to an extent I have here in this episode, but I do think that to gain greater perspective and understanding, a medical professional would be the most appropriate individual to talk about this. Or, of course, someone who's gone through this themselves in a very personal way, to the extent that they are in a position where they feel comfortable sharing that experience. Everyone, as I said, is not the same. It takes incredible courage to do what each of these women did in this New York Times story, and also, of course, what Chrissy Teigen did just last month when she experienced her miscarriage, and what Meghan Markle did just a couple of days ago when she wrote about her experience of miscarriage back 2 days ago. But the experience of miscarriage for her came back in July of this year. And just again, just a few weeks after she had made that such an incredibly empowering speech to the young girls of Immaculate High School, Immaculate Heart High School there in Los Angeles, California. I guess a woman who goes through this never feels the same again. You know? I don't know what that must feel like for her, whoever that woman is. These are real conversations we've got to start having. And we need to be fully heard. And one of the ways we can be fully heard is if we do talk about these experiences, but also when we are ready to talk about them. And also, yet more, when there are others out there who are willing to listen. And not only that, without judgment, without insult, without dismissal. The key is to be in a position where you are ready to speak your truth, and not when some man tells you that you should or shouldn't. Because there's always going to be someone out there who is going to say, oh my goodness, why didn't you come out with this 20 years ago or 10 or 5? And there is always going to be someone who is going to say, why did you say that? That's too much information. Keep that private. Why did you have to tell us that? I don't want to hear it. That's the same man with two hypocritical opposing positions. And the bottom line is that that particular type of man doesn't give a rat's about any woman who goes through these kinds of things. I've only barely scratched the surface. I've not even talked about how, let alone anything of that nature when it comes to this. I just don't know really where to start, and it's probably not fair for me to try. But this is very difficult. And I'm a man talking about this. So it just goes to show you, just imagine how difficult it is for a woman who has gone through this, experienced this, to talk about it. To be continued. I want to thank you for sticking with this, because this is something that is very important. Very important indeed. So thank you for your continued loyalty, and thank you for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. May these experiences and the telling of them give others solace, empowerment, and a way to speak their truth. I'm Omar Moore.